It's episode 120 of the Hodgepodge Podcast. I'm your host, Doug.
And I'm Dirty A. As the name suggests, we're going to talk about a hodgepodge of topics from movies, music, TV, and other pop culture events.
And on this episode, we'll be discussing the films Deepwater Horizon and Magnificent Seven. And a little later, our friend Matt King will stop by to discuss Blair Witch with Dirty A. You can reach us at thehodgepodgepodcast@gmail.com. Or over on our website, thehodgepodgepodcast.com. Or look us up on iTunes and YouTube and subscribe. Or look for us on Facebook, search for our page, and like us. And this episode is coming to you very late because we tried to record it last week and the audio got all fucked up. there might be Sully in here as well if I can salvage it.
but you won't know what the fuck to watch in the fall.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you can read my thing. Just watch Westworld, which starts next week on HBO. That's pretty much the big news.
Yeah, no real news, I guess. I mean, what, they had the Emmys?
The Emmys. Yeah, that's big. Yeah. We get so hung up on the movies and the Oscars and stuff like that, we forget about the Emmys. The Emmys was actually...
Yeah, everyone else forgot, too.
Yeah, apparently.
The lowest rated Emmys ever.
But see, that's what's so sad, because, like, from all accounts, from the critics of it, they're like, this Emmy's got everything, like, pretty much right.
But the problem of what you're missing is the problem is that people are not watching network TV anymore.
Exactly.
Which is what the Emmys is on. That's why it's the lowest rating.
Yeah, exactly.
Look at all the nominees and winners, right? Well, not all of them, but...
The Emmys have essentially become the ACE Awards now.
Yeah,
because, because literally, I think in drama, there was no network show nominated at all for the best drama. The Good Wife held on for a long time, for several years, but that was like the last one to go. And then in comedy, there was, Modern Family was nominated. I don't know if Big Bang Theory was nominated. But
I didn't look this year. I didn't see if.
But Veep won again. Veep won for comedy. Well deserved. Cause last season was fucking hilarious.
And
Game of Thrones won for best drama.
Eh.
I think that's a case of, I liked last season of Game of Thrones a lot. I think that's also a case of kind of rewarding it now that Breaking Bad is gone, because it happens in cycles.
You're right.
Like West Wing won for all those years, and then Mad Men won for all those years, and they threw The Sopranos some.
Yeah,
and,
for sure. I mean, that wasn't like.
And even Breaking Bad didn't win the best drama until like the last couple seasons. Right?
Yeah, it was because like
Mad
the
Men
last
was winning.
That's
whole.
Right. Mad Men kept winning. Yeah. This year, and I have no doubt he's still worthy. I don't really. Didn't follow all the nominees, but like Patton Oswalt won for best comedy.
Yeah,
and that was likely not that he's not worthy.
No,
but
he
there was
totally
probably
is.
A lot of a sympathy vote in there too.
Yeah, because of what happened with his wife. His wife, if you don't know the story, his wife passed away, I think, in April.
Just
and
in
just
her sleep.
Suddenly just, died in her sleep, and it's real sad. He's got a 7-year-old daughter that now he's basically raising on his own. Now
got my tickets to see him in December. Woohoo!
Good job. I will buy his CD or DVD. Because I have something else to do that night. Already. Julia Louis-Dreyfus won for Best Actress again.
Sullen.
I know.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus,
I know.
Right?
Jezebel.com did it. They wrote some story about what's wrong with Julia Louis-Dreyfus because she wasn't smiling when Kate McKinnon won her award for Best Supporting Actress in a Comedy. Which I really don't think... Saturday Night Live people should be allowed to win that. They should have a separate
category.
There's
a separate category. That's like variety show. It's different. It's different. I agree.
But the reason why Julia Louis-Dreyfus wasn't smiling is because her father died literally 2 days before the ceremony.
Like,
I mean, so it's like, fuck you, asshole internet people.
Tatiana
Maslany
won.
She won for Best Actress for
finally,
Orphan Black.
For Orphan Black.
Yeah.
Most people that watch that show have been saying she should have won for years. Mm-hmm. Likely, whether that's the case or not, likely this was also a last-ditch effort to give that to her because next season is the last season
for that, yeah.
But that said, she is awesome. She's great. I mean, she plays freaking six different characters.
Yeah, I was going to say five characters on the show. Jeffrey Tambor won again for
Transparent
for Best Actor.
Which I still haven't seen the second season of that.
Oh, really?
Like,
third one's about to start.
I know the third
one's
about to start. It's one of those things where outside of... Even on Netflix, but certainly outside of Netflix, it's out of sight, out of mind for me.
Right.
Like, I love the first season of Transparent, but then I'm like,
but this one's on Amazon.
Amazon. That's what I'm saying. It's
even more out of sight.
That's
of
what
mind.
I'm saying. Yeah, it's right. Like outside of Netflix.
Oh, right, right.
That's what I'm saying. The other places like Hulu, whatever. Yeah. Hulu.
I have Prime now, so I actually finally watched that now.
Yeah, and I have Prime too. I could have been watching it, and I just don't think about it.
I want to watch that. I want to watch Bosch because I heard that's good. And then I also want to watch Man in the High Castle.
Man in the High Castle was the other one I really want to watch, yeah.
So it's like, I mean, I was telling somebody, my friend, she watched that new NBC show, This Is Us, and she was gushing about it, you know, because it's a real romantic drama, girly show type thing, you know. And so she was, oh my God, I can't. And I just wrote one comment on her page. I wrote, network TV is dead. Yeah. And I'm just like, it's all about Netflix and HBO for me. I'm like, I don't really care about anything else. What else? Who else won? Best comedy. Best actor in a drama was Rami Malek for Mr.
Robot.
He won.
Yeah.
And
which that second season just ended.
Right. And Game of Thrones won a bunch of awards. Oh, the The People versus O.J. Simpson won
that swept
like the whole miniseries thing.
Yeah.
Sarah Paulson won for Best Actress. Courtney B. Vance won for Best Actor, and I forget the guy's name Sterling Brown, I think his name. He won. He was Chris Darden. He won Best Supporting Actor, and he I'm looking at this guy, and I'm like, where do I remember him from? He was Beecher on Person of Interest. Uh-huh. He was Taraji P. Henson's romantic interest on Person of Interest,
which I don't. Chris Darden had an interview this week.
Oh, really?
Where he said he and Marsha Clark did get it on during the OJ period.
Sarah Paulson said we
did have a relationship.
Sarah Paulson did bring she brought Marsha Clark with her to the ceremony.
Did she?
Who won best? Best Supporting Actress was Kate McKinnon for for comedy. Ben Mendelsohn won for best.
That's right.
Best actor, supporting actor in a drama for Bloodline.
Bloodline, yeah.
And
which is awesome show. That's not.
Yeah.
After next season, we'll be done.
Yeah, yeah. It's the first Netflix original show that got canceled. Yeah.
They don't release ratings or anything,
right? So. But they said not enough people are watching it to justify the cost.
It's got a huge stack. Yeah,
I mean, you got Kyle Chandler, Sissy Spacek, Linda Cardellini, and then Ben Mendelsohn.
It's a huge cast.
Yeah,
and it had, I guess, first season it had
Sam Shepard, right?
Yeah, so yeah, I understand that,
right? Yeah, it's a good show, but I understand people who don't like it because it is a slow burn,
super slow.
It takes a while to get going.
It's all about the characters, character drama all the way, and any show that's designed that way is just slow.
I'm gonna fail in my quest to finish it, finish season two before Luke Cage, but. Mm. But it's okay.
Which starts Friday.
Starts this Friday, yes. Cannot wait. Luke Cage has been getting some great reviews. And then Westworld starts that Sunday, which is also getting great reviews. They're saying it's the next big thing for HBO, which is good because they need it.
They will need it because Game of Thrones will be done.
In 2 years, yeah.
Yeah, not this coming season, but the following
season. Yes, yeah. But yeah, so the Emmys. And Jimmy Kimmel, from what I could tell, did a good job.
Was he the host?
Yeah, he was the host. My favorite bit that I saw online was Jimmy Kimmel lost for best late night talk show or whatever, and then Matt Damon came out on stage.
Yeah. Of course he did.
And he was like giving him the business. It was awesome. He's like, oh, did you win? He's like, oh, it's too bad. It's too bad.
that whole thing is the funniest.
Yeah.
Jimmy
Kimmel revealed he did an interview with Entertainment Weekly before the Emmys, and he revealed that obviously Sarah Silverman did the I'm fucking Matt Damon thing, but then the rebuttal I'm fucking Ben Affleck was actually Jennifer Garner's idea. That was her idea for them to do that, which was interesting. And I guess the other big news, Love is Dead, people.
Oh, that's right.
Brangelina is no more.
Yeah, sorry.
Angelina Jolie filed for divorce from Brad Pitt. And
now, of course, they're wild reports of him, like, child abuse.
Yes. It's so stupid. It's so stupid. Yeah, I know. And of course, and then all these people are coming out of the woodwork like, yay, Jennifer Aniston. I'm like, they were together for like 12 years. It's like, it's not like they were together for 6 months and then that was it.
Right.
I mean, they've been together for over a decade. But it just goes to show you, Dirty A, what was the problem with their relationship? They got married.
Right. People,
everything was fine for a decade while they weren't married.
People don't forget.
That's right.
People don't forget.
That's right. That's right. That's why Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell stay not married.
Or I think they broke up too.
No, they didn't.
No?
No, they're still together.
I thought I heard
still
they
together.
Broke up too.
No, they're still together. Yeah. You might be thinking of...
I know Susan Sarandon and Tim Robbins years ago.
Yeah. And then she got some like 20-year-old piece of ass. I mean,
they were together for like 25 years or something like that without being married. And then they're just like, ah, fuck it.
All right. So that's the big news. The Emmys and then Westworld and Luke Cage are starting on TV.
That's not all the only big news.
Oh, tell me.
Nicole Franzel wins Big Brother.
Oh, okay. Yay!
No,
boo!
No. She played a great game, but no. Anywho, that's the big news.
Okay, that's... Yeah. I don't know why that wasn't on the front page of every entertainment...
It was.
I don't think it was. I think it was the front page of Entertainment Weekly for 5 minutes, and then they said, Brangelina!
Yeah, that was the big news this week, for sure.
Note to everybody who's online, no, Jennifer Aniston did not go on to today's show and start dropping F-bombs. Somebody posted something that Jennifer Aniston went on the Today show and said, these fucking people, all they care about is this Brangelina stuff, and then she starts talking about the poor man who got killed in Ohio, and stuff like that. I'm like, that'd be great if she said that, but there's no way that Jennifer Aniston, America's sweetheart, went on the Today show and was dropping F-bombs. Right. There's no way that happened. And sure enough, if you go on Snopes, it's not true.
Is she still America's sweetheart?
Clearly. All these people are like, yeah, Jennifer Aniston's laughing somewhere. And I'm like, is she?
I don't think she cares anymore.
From what I understand, she's got her own problems with Justin Theroux. So, Mr. Leftovers. I'm gonna splice in the talk that you guys did about Blair Witch that you and Matt did, and then I'm gonna try and salvage our talk about Sully. So first, why don't you guys take the wheel and tell us about the greatest movie of the summer / beginning of the fall, Blair Witch?
Yeah. Jesus Christ, where do we even start?
There's not very much to talk about.
Yeah, it's
literally the exact same thing as Blair Witch Project. With, like, a small plot twist of sorts.
Maybe, yeah. It's
and a flying tent, from what I understand.
Yeah, but it's the same plot line exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, they've upgraded the cameras.
Right, exactly. That's all it is.
That they use.
Yeah.
They've added dumber characters this time around. Which I thought was a change.
How refreshing.
Yeah, how refreshing. Dumber people.
Was the first one digital? Was that like one of like the first digital movies? Or
I don't know. I don't remember. Like, when did the first one come out? Was it 90? Or was
no,
it 2000?
No, it was 2003 or 4. Four?
Oh,
was, it four?
Was it that late?
Or was it 5?
I thought it was earlier.
No, I don't think so.
I thought it was in the 90s.
No, definitely not the 90s.
Here we go. Time to go to IMDb.
Somehow we end up on The Price is Right.
Yes.
It was 99. Okay.
Oh, 99. Okay.
99. Wow.
Yeah.
Right on the money there. My bad. I was a good 5 years off.
Okay.
I did see it in theaters when it opened. I remember. I just, hell if I remember anything about it.
Yeah, so every mistake that the first movie did not make, this one did. The first movie just sort of hinted that there might be some sort of like paranormal stuff going on, but in reality, it was more like a dude, I think. Because when there was
you never saw anything.
Yeah, you never did, but it was like it was more likely that it was just some guy like kidnapping people. There was like almost a serial killer thing, but he was being possessed by the witch or something. But in this, you actually see the witch.
Yeah. They give a manifestation to the actual witch.
Yeah.
Stupid.
And it's way more paranormal stuff in it. And it makes, it's absolutely terrible.
Well, first of all, you can't take a movie that, I guess, as we just saw, you can't take a movie that literally came out over 15 years ago
not change anything about it. Take away the one thing that had the original going for it, which was the mythos.
Yeah.
And then expect it to work.
Right.
The only thing the original had going for it was that it created the mythos around it that, hey, this could be real. This is found footage, and this is actually
there was a novelty to it. We hadn't really seen movies like that before, and it was, you know, people were asking, you know, is this real? Was this real footage that they found?
Right.
So it had that going for it, and it did have, at least to me, a legitimately scary last 3 or 4 seconds.
That was it.
That was it. I mean, nothing else in it was scary.
Agreed.
And this one, it's everybody in this movie communicates by sneaking up on other people and then screaming in their ear. and then once the paranormal stuff starts, the movie just goes off the rails. Like somebody snaps a voodoo doll thing almost in half, and a girl is up on the ground snapped in half. And then that's when the tent flies up into the air for no reason that I can. I was just sitting there watching it and not involved in the plot at all because the plot was stupid. I was just sitting there going, what does the witch get out of this? Like, what is she after?
Their soul.
But really, what's she doing? She's like hanging out in the shadows in the trees. And then whenever somebody wanders off on their own, she causes like a tree to fall on them.
Something. Of sorts.
Yeah.
Or she drags them away.
Or she infects their wounds with...
Which that really didn't do anything, because that wasn't even... You'd think that would have been at least if that had ended up killing her, that would have been kind of cool.
But that wasn't even the thing.
In fact, it made her sick, yes, but man, she was moving around like everyone else as if nothing was wrong with her. I was like...
But before they unveiled that she had some sort of living thing inside of her, every step she took sounded like a compound like a fracture.
Broken bone.
Yeah. She like steps on like a, and she's like, and they're like, oh my God, are you okay? She's like, yeah, fine.
What?
It sounded like you like broke multiple bones in your legs. Do not go see this movie.
But literally, and you're right about, you know, just dumb people. It's the old adage of, you know, what's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing again.
Yeah, expecting different results.
These people literally go, hey, we're going to go out into these woods and find my sister. You're going to find your sister who was lost 15, 17 years ago? You're going to find your sister? No, you're not. No one would even think that's possible. It's not like you're acting like this took place a year later or something like that.
And they make such a big deal about the technology that they're using, including the drone.
Yeah, the drone. Which serves zero purpose.
Served absolutely no purpose except to do the same shot multiple times.
Yeah.
Where it just goes straight up and then you see the tops of the trees.
Yeah.
And that's it.
That reminds me of the trailer for Inferno. They're like, oh my God, it's a drone coming after us.
Yeah.
Apparently she has control over technology.
Great.
Because she just makes things fail.
Oh, so it's Enchantress.
Yes, it's Enchantress.
So it's a sequel to Suicide.
In any case, this is literally basically a remake of the original. If you've seen that one, you've seen a far superior film.
Far superior.
Just pass on.
And I don't think the first one is all that great to be
honest. No, exactly. Yeah. We're not singing high praises for the first one, but it's still
compared to this.
Yeah.
It is so much better.
Yep. Okay.
Oh, so there's that.
I'll be sure to go see it.
Yeah.
So let's turn our discussion to...
No, Sulky.
Sully.
Sullen.
Sully. James P. Sullivan.
Scully. Chesley Sullenberg.
Oh, that's why I was confused. I was waiting for Boo and Mike Wazowski to show up.
No.
Sully is the story of the Miracle on the Hudson, which happened, 7 years ago. And, that's the inherent problem with the movie. That's one of the problems. That's one of the problems. I mean, this is an event that everybody knew about that was all over the news. Sullenberger, also known as Sully, he was the captain of the flight, and you know he was all over talk shows. I mean, he couldn't go anywhere. Everybody knew who this guy was. Basically, what happened was he lost engine power. fairly early into the flight, and then
both engines, Doug, both engines.
Well, the simulations are that the left engine got and he had to land the plane in the Hudson because he couldn't get back to the airport. And everybody lived. There was no, you know, no spoiler alert here. Everybody lived. He saved everybody's life. He was a hero. I mean, he was. The problem is that once you know the story, that's all there really is to it. The movie focuses a lot on the NTSB and their investigation.
Yeah, a lot of manufactured drama here, which we're not saying did not happen.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is, that's not what the audience is going to care too much.
Right. They were trying. They were trying to show that he was negligent and that the plane could have made it back.
Right.
And
for insurance purposes,
right,
the airline is basically fighting against the union, saying your pilot was the one that's negligent, so that
right,
we can get our insurance money.
Right.
But clearly, we all know that didn't happen.
Right. Because that would have been all over the news as well. They had found out that he was.
Yeah.
So you know, the movie becomes kind of ridiculous when you're just like, you're sitting there the whole time as these guys, and for some reason, what's that guy's name? Mike O'Malley, something like that. That's the main guy. He's like the comedian. He was the main guy in the NTSB.
Oh, the NTSB. Yeah.
Like for some reason, like Gila was like really out to get him.
Again, that's why I use the word manufactured, because they needed an antagonist here.
Yeah.
So they basically created one. I mean,
right,
you know what I mean? They needed not just a body like the NTSB, but they needed someone physical to be the antagonist.
Right.
So they made that guy the antagonist.
So he's like really out to get them and out to get Sully. And it's just, you know, the whole time that they're going through their motions and their investigation, you're just sitting there in your mind going, but everybody lived. But everybody lived.
But it wasn't about that, right?
Right. But I mean, it's about the risk and then the plane.
They lost
a
plane worth millions of dollars. So.
And
so the problem with this movie is that it's 96 plus minutes long or something like that.
Yeah.
And as the movie points out several times, it's all about an event that takes 203 seconds.
Right.
And that's all that people cared about.
Yeah, the stuff on the plane was cool.
So
I mean, that was
it's just dumb to drag this out.
Right.
And
he has a lot of Batman nightmares.
Yeah. Half the movie is some form of hallucination or nightmare.
Yeah, of him. Yeah. And I think he was waiting for the Flash to come contact him or something like that.
Yeah.
To take him to the future.
Really
too early?
It's really odd when they decided to jump in and out of that.
Yeah.
But Eastwood had to add some, because it wasn't going to hold its own.
And the problem is, the other problem is too, is that because the movie is so short, and they don't really tell you anything about Sully beforehand, you don't really connect with him as a character. So like when he's sitting there going, "Oh my God, I could lose the pension, all this stuff," you're just like,
"So
A, I know that didn't happen, and B, I don't really know you."
Yeah,
so
that's the problem. You have all these marquee actors in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
None of them need to be here. You could have made this movie with anybody, and it would have been just as enjoyable. Like, you're not looking at the movie going, "Oh, Tom Hanks."
Yeah.
You know, or "Oh, look, there's Laura Linney."
Yeah.
It could have been anybody. This was a made-for-TV movie with a super huge budget.
Pretty much.
Is what it was. And it's not a bad movie. By the way, it's not a bad
movie. No, it's not a bad movie.
It's just
it's passable.
Blah.
Yeah. Make sure you see it in IMAX.
Yeah, and it's inexplicably released in IMAX. Why, I don't know. I don't have any idea.
I gotta be honest, sometimes when they showed the plane, like the profile of the plane, it kind of looked fake.
Yeah.
Like it looked like it was like someone going, "Ree."
But you know,
with a model.
And I'm not saying this isn't true, because it very well could be true. But I find it hard to buy into the fact that, you know, the kind of, if you want to call it this, the twist they gave, which was, "You're not accounting for human factor." It's like, really, you're telling me that they don't account, like they've never had any kind of, I know this has never happened before,
right,
but they've never done any kind of simulation.
Well,
they
did say, they said, you know, this is like a very strange thing for us where we've had a crash.
And we're talking to the pilots,
because usually everybody's dead,
yeah,
or for the majority of people are dead, except for Bruce Willis.
Absolutely.
But I mean, you know, it's...
There was one single survivor, miraculously unharmed.
It was them kids.
They called me Mr. Glass.
It looks like Mr. Glass is going to be in Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children.
Good to see him again.
But yeah, so yeah, Sully is decent, but you don't really need to see the theater.
It's a waste of $10 because it's a made-for-TV movie.
It really is true. I mean, it really is. I mean, there's no story there. There's really like no story there that you don't know already.
Yeah, they try.
It's not like something. Say like, let's say you like United 93, where like where you know how that story ends too, but there was like a story there and like the struggle of the people to like try and like take over the plane and stuff like that.
You also know that ends poorly. So
no, that there's that too. There's tragedy there.
So that helps that along too.
I will say this though. In the scenes with the plane, I did get kind of tensed up, and I am glad I saw this after my trip.
I never felt any tinge of emotion here. I mean, Eastwood did his best to try to create some form of controversy and
the way that Sully and like the flight attendants acted prior to the accident made me think that they knew what was going to happen. Like they were just like he was always like yes. He was like a robot. He was like
that's
he was all business all the time, which is
before
fine.
And after he was right. even when he's having his meltdowns, he's still very calm, cool, and collected, which is fine. That's the character,
right?
That was what they wanted to portray. But
he never had his Captain Phillips.
I mean, you just have people like Aaron Eckhart and Tom Hanks sitting there, and they're just completely wasted here.
Mm-hmm. Did Aaron Eckhart ever go, look at me, I am the captain?
No, but he did like pull skin off half his face.
Oh, cool.
It was like,
flip a coin.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, he was the one who actually calls it. He's in there going, do they live or do they die?
But he wasn't like Tommy Lee Jones' take on the character where he just constantly flips a coin until he gets the result
gets the one he wants. That is the exact opposite of what Two-Face does. And that doesn't even make sense, actually.
So anyway, we'll call it not a non-recommendation on Sully, but not an enthusiastic recommendation.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing because I will not tell you to go waste $10 on this.
Right.
But at the same time, it's a fine movie if you rent it for $1
when
it comes out or wait for it on the movie channel or something.
Right.
I'll give us a transition. So that's Sully for you.
this episode has been sullied. So let's talk about Magnificent Seven. Or as you called it earlier, the decent seven.
The decent seven. The not so bad seven.
Magnificent Seven is directed by Anton Fuqua. And he has worked with Denzel Washington in a bunch of stuff. He did Training Day.
And Ethan Hawke.
And Ethan Hawke, right. He did Training Day and he directed The Equalizer with Denzel Washington recently. And so now they're working again together on Magnificent Seven. And the original Magnificent Seven.
And they've actually, he's announced
he's going to do it for Equalizer 2. Thank God. Yeah. The original Magnificent Seven came out in 1960. And that itself was a reimagining of the Akira Kurosawa film Seven Samurai. And which they basically just took this samurai movie and then turned it into a Western.
Right.
So that's kind of one of the problems that I had with Magnificent Seven.
It's a remake of a remake.
It's a copy of a copy, basically. And it's like, if you're going to do that, why not modernize it or make it a sci-fi story or something like that? Why did you just go straight to making a Western again? And it kind of smacked a lot of Ocean's 12, where it was a movie that they did solely so the cast could hang out and, you know, and have fun and do this stuff. Not that they shouldn't be able to have fun when they're making a movie, but it's like, it's kind of pointless to make this movie.
The thing is, the director, Fuqua, he loves Westerns, actually.
Right.
He's a big fan of Westerns, and he likens movies that he made, like Training Day, to a modern-day Western.
Right.
I think he just probably really wanted to make a Western and probably loved this movie.
Yeah.
So it was probably more of a pet project for him. And the movie's fine.
There's nothing wrong with it. It's entertaining. It's fun.
There's nothing egregiously bad about the movie.
But there's really no reason for it to exist, basically.
No, I mean, it was fine. It's entertaining. It's you get your $10 worth, I'd say, if you go see it.
Yeah.
But it's no...
There's no substance
Oscar
at all.
Winner,
yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Winners or anything.
Yeah, there's no substance in it at all.
It was written by, I believe, two screenwriters. The first screenwriter was Richard Wenk. And then the other guy was Nick Pizzolatto, who you'll know from True Detective. And when I saw his name pop up on the screen, I'm like, oh my God, that's a True Detective guy. So they wrote the screenplay. And not a lot of character yet development
not,
here.
yet not a single Leonard Cohen
no.
Song no. In this movie.
No.
None.
No.
None.
And the movie, the general premise is the same as the original. But and the premise is that a gunfighter assembles a team of other gunslingers to protect the town from villains. In the original, it was a Mexican town. It was like a border town, village, and they were being harassed by bandits. And so they go out in search of the gunslingers to protect them. In this one, it's a little bit more complicated, I guess, in that...
Like a tycoon.
Right. He's like an industrialist played by Peter Sarsgaard. And he wants this gold mine that's in this town in, where is it, New Mexico, I guess, or something like that. New Mexico. And he wants that, and then he kills one of the townspeople.
Well, not only that, he wants the whole town. I mean,
right, he wants the whole town. He's offering them pennies.
He knows they have gold in the town, so he basically wants to demolish the town to turn it into
a giant mine,
yeah.
And then he's paying them penny. He wants to pay them pennies or he's going to kill them. He murders a guy and that guy's wife goes out.
Matt Bomer.
Yes. Yes. Our friend she was like, oh my God, I didn't know he was in this. And then I was
he's not.
Well, no, that's how I was like, yeah. And then he dies. And I go, that's why you didn't know he was in this.
He's in it like he's in everything else for 5 minutes.
5 minutes. And, so then his wife, who's played by Haley Bennett, who apparently is going to be in every movie this fall, she's going to be in Girl on the Train and some other movies, she goes out in search of someone to help them. They come across...
Denzel is who they come across. But that's an odd moment for me because it's like, were you searching for him? Did you just happen across him?
They just happen to cross paths with him.
But then you think, this is the guy? Like, right. It's odd how that works.
And Denzel plays Sam Chisholm, who is a bounty hunter / lawman. And this was another thing that rankled me about this movie. His introduction is almost ripped completely out of Django Unchained. That's almost exactly the same way it happens when King Schultz goes to get his first bounty after he frees Django.
Yeah,
it's almost exactly the same.
You're right.
And I was like, the fuck are you doing, man? Come on.
Yeah.
Now that makes me think, maybe Nick Pizzolatto did rip off the first season of True Detective, and he can't write anything original.
He just likes to steal shit.
Exactly. So he doesn't want to get involved at first, but then they tell him the guy's name, the industrial's name, and then he wants to get involved.
And of course... Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, and you don't find out why he's really involved until the very, very end of the movie, basically.
Right. Well, but
there's hints.
That there's a personal tie.
Right.
I mean, they drop many a reason. Like when he's talking with Ethan Hawke's character, he mentions, want to make sure you're doing this for the present, not the past. So you know that he's got some personal ties here.
Right.
But as soon as he's introduced, you're basically also introduced to Chris Pratt's character,
right?
Who's in the bar, and Chris Pratt, God love him, is just playing Chris Pratt.
Yeah.
He's doing the same thing again. We've given him enough passes now.
Yeah.
I think in movies.
Yeah.
He's not playing bad. He's not playing his part badly.
Right.
But he's just doing himself. He's not acting really.
Right.
Like. It's the same character over and over again.
Yep. It's a Vince Vaughn syndrome.
Yeah. Yes. It's just like Vince Vaughn. It's just him. It's just him being quirky.
Yeah.
Him being funny, sarcastic, and yet he's also manly and studly at the same time.
Right.
That's it. And that's every character he does. And it's the same here. And as soon as I said this, we were talking right before we started recording this. I said I haven't seen the original Magnificent Seven.
Right.
But as soon as I saw him on screen, I said, there's zero chance the original character was written like this.
No.
No way.
And that's what I was telling you before we started, too, is that all the characters are different. Now, there are characters that correspond to some of the characters from the original, like Byung Hung Lee, who plays...
The assassin
guy with the knives. He is... matched by James Coburn's character, who was good with a knife. And they have that whole scene where, like, they introduce him with, he's shooting the guy, he's throwing the knife at the guy. Okay. So he corresponds with him.
There's no one for one, really, outside of that.
No. Ethan Hawke was the same as Robert Vaughn's character. Okay. He was kind of like a dandy sharpshooter guy. And it's kind of the same thing.
A dandy.
Ghost Cup.
And, honestly, they were the most intriguing characters in the movie.
That's what I wrote in my review. I was I really wanted to see a Good Night and Billy movie.
Me too. Yeah. They were the most intriguing characters in the movie by far. They had the most development.
Yes.
And there's odd.
And there's none in this movie beyond that.
Right, yeah. So you look at... So Chisholm... He doesn't really have development. He gets his cathartic moment
at the end,
but there's no character development.
He's just cool because he's Denzel Washington.
Right.
And then if that's the case, and also his character is so good with the gun, I'm sitting there just going, I'd rather just see the Equalizer sequel. So I'm glad that they decided they're going to finally make that.
You have Chris Pratt's character, Faraday, who has the most generic character development of them all. He's like, I'm for me.
Wait.
And then at the end, oh, I'm for everybody, and I'm gonna, you know.
Wait, I could have sworn they called him Star Lord halfway through the movie.
Right.
They didn't. Oh, no, that was my imagination.
Or whatever his fucking name is in Jurassic World.
Or Raptor guy from Jurassic World.
Because it's the same character. Either way,
love Chris Pratt.
But
this is the exact reason why I got so pissed when people were like saying, "Oh, he's gonna be the new Indiana Jones." I was like, "He better fucking not be."
And by the way, like, well, granted, there are two reasons it works better. One, because it was the first time you really see it. But the second, because just the genre movie, the kind of movie it was supposed to be made, James Gunn.
Mm-hmm.
This character, his character works
1,000%
in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right.
Because it was, I guarantee you, James Gunn wrote it that way.
Right.
He probably picked Chris Pratt because of who Chris Pratt is. And so that character works with Guardians of the Galaxy. To say it doesn't work in these other roles is unfair.
No,
but
he's
not changing anything.
But don't come to me and tell me that he's going to replace Harrison Ford as Indiana Jones. Right. It's like, fuck you, no he's not. Because Harrison Ford could be funny too, but then he knew how to fucking play it straight too, all the time.
Especially in his real life. He plays it way straight.
Actually, going back to the fucking Ben Affleck thing, the other reason why I did it is because Harrison Ford wanted to get involved. He wanted to get involved with it, and he was in the video. He blows him a kiss from his car.
Hey Harrison, can you teach me how to fly the Millennium Falcon?
It's a fake
ship in space. That's all you need to know. The fuck are you trying to do? Fucking Oscar Isaac was like, womp womp.
Dun, 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 bam.
Vincent D'Onofrio.
He's playing Dan Aykroyd from Caddyshack.
He does. Me and Doug are watching this movie, and I thought immediately.
I didn't say anything. Finally,
a third of the way through the movie, I look at Doug, and I'm like, he seems just like Dan Aykroyd's character in Caddyshack 2. Which to most people would be like, who's that? But me and Doug were like, yes, that's exactly what it is. His voice, because he's got this real high voice.
If I take the arrow out, will you suck out the poison? From now on, you refer to me as Mr. Sanderson, and I'll refer to you as Mrs. Esterhouse. Keep your eye on the fruit. Keep your eye on the fruit.
And it didn't make any sense. There was no reason why. No, it's almost like he went to a few choir and was like, hey, I want to give this guy a voice. And he's like, oh, okay.
Like, he should have just done it like the Kingpin.
Well, no, the idea, I think it was the idea was the juxtaposition.
You
got this huge bear-like guy, and he's got a very high voice.
Right,
it was the juxtaposition of the voice with the character.
But it just didn't work.
It didn't work that well.
And the other thing is...
And by the way, his character could have been great. Like, could have had a real intricate backstory, but they don't give it to him.
And the other thing is, too, is like they say that he's an Indian killer. Native American, but I'm just using their terminology. Right. He scalps Indians and stuff like that. And then who joins the team? A Comanche warrior. And there is no conflict between them.
They have one scene where he tries to give it the lightest conflict ever, but that's not how that works.
No,
someone who hunts
Indians
versus a scalper who is a Comanche Indian. Yeah, that's not the way that works.
No.
How did that work out in the...
No, there was no such thing.
Oh, and that didn't even exist.
They just made that up for this movie.
Okay.
Because basically, and that's one thing I will
give. Which makes sense, by the way, because mm-hmm. the Indian, the American, Native American, the Comanche, we'll call him the Comanche.
Right.
He just shows up out of nowhere and all of a sudden he's just in the group.
And that happens too. That happens in the original movie. But the guy who tracks them is somebody they met in the beginning of the movie.
Right,
and then he wants to join the group and then he has to prove it.
But even I was telling you right after we got out of this movie, that type of thing works better in the older movies where you just have characters join in.
Right.
It was more commonplace back then.
Right.
Now you really need some story behind that.
Right,
to
it made
no
sense.
Yeah.
And then once again, here's the screenwriter stealing from another movie, you know, when he cuts out the deer's liver or whatever.
Oh, yeah,
that's right out of the fucking Revenant.
When he gives him the heart,
Leonardo DiCaprio has to eat the heart. I'm like, that's the Revenant. What are you doing? That it's like at least Django. You can say that came out a few years ago.
To be fair,
Revenant came out like 2 years ago.
To be fair, that
not even.
To be fair, that's likely a historical thing.
Yeah, maybe. But I mean, but it's like, but it's. I mean, come on. Yeah. I mean, that movie just came out like last week.
It's like you didn't need to have that in there.
Right. Exactly. And then there's, I forget the guy's name, he plays Vasquez, who's he's a wanted felon, basically, and then Chisholm says, you couldn't even remember who the hell he was. Chisholm says, I'll rip up your warrant or whatever if you join our team. And then Ethan Hawke plays...
spoiler alert, he's the only one, the one who lives in the end for no reason.
Ethan Hawke plays Goodnight Robichaud, who's a sharpshooter.
He's a high ranking officer.
Yeah, in the
from the
Confederacy.
From the Confederacy in the Civil War, and he's got super bad PTSD.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, back then they
didn't know what that was.
But yeah,
he's just yellow.
He's known. He's like.
A sharpshooter.
He's famous for his kills.
Right.
His number of kills in the war.
Right.
But now, as you'll find out, I guess spoilers. It doesn't
matter.
In this movie.
If you've seen the original, that's Robert Vaughn's character as well.
Yeah. So
he didn't have a history in the Civil War, but it was the same kind of thing.
He's gun shy. He doesn't want to kill anymore. So he joins up with this group.
Because he's friends with Chisholm.
He's friends because Chisholm comes to him and asks for help because they know each other from the war.
And
his
traveling companion.
His traveling companion, Billy Rocks, who's played by...
Byung-Hun Lee.
Byung-Hun Lee.
Who played Storm Shadow in the G.I. Joe movies.
There you go. They're a pair.
Yeah.
And you get the sense early on that he's got a secret.
Yeah,
and as it turns out, his secret is that he's
gun shy,
Byung-Hun Lee basically serves almost like his bodyguard now.
Yeah, yeah.
If you look at it that way,
it's really I like the dynamic between
the
characters.
It's so good. Like we said, we would like to see a movie with them. That would be great. But Faraday, Chris Pratt's character, kind of picks up early on.
Right.
That Goodnight is having issues.
Right.
And that was I like that scene when he like calls him out and then he does his thing and he's like I said.
Yeah, exactly.
great shooter.
Exactly. I will give a few this credit. I did like how he made it more multicultural, the group. Because essentially, I mean, there's a guy named Chico in the other one, but essentially it's all a bunch of white dudes in the original.
Yeah, yeah.
But the original, I mean, what a cast that had, too. Yul Brynner had Charles Bronson, James Coburn, Robert Vaughn, fucking Steve McQueen's in it.
Which is why it's a classic, probably.
Right,
because of
the
casting.
And they made several sequels after it, too. But which is interesting, because at the end of that, only three guys lived, too. So, and then one of them quits.
Oh, the Magnificent Two.
That's the problem. That's the final problem that I had with this movie is that we were talking about the character development. There isn't a ton of character development in the original, but the difference is there's more quiet moments in the original, and they form a stronger bond with the townspeople in that than they do in this one.
Yeah. To be fair, in movies like this, you essentially got seven leads.
Right.
It is hard to do character
development. Oh, yeah, for sure.
But it's not impossible.
It's not, no.
And they certainly, like we said, gave, I think, the most of the development was in Goodnight's character, I think.
Yeah.
Where they seemed to really want you to focus, at least for me. Maybe I just focused there because I thought it was the most intriguing character.
Right.
But yeah, there's not a lot here.
Yeah, there isn't. And the other thing that's striking as well, and this shows the difference between today's movies and yesteryear's movies, is that in the original, the final gun battle takes like 10 minutes. This one, it's like a fucking half an hour.
It, well like, okay, so they got the middle gun battle, which was cool. Right. I like that one.
That was cool. That was really cool.
That was great. That was great because it was fast. And it was quick. And it was quick. You know, it's like 5 minutes. Yeah. But yeah, that last one drug out.
It took forever.
Now, granted, I know I'm saying this reminds me of something
right
when I know this came first because
no. I think they did take it from what you're thinking.
Did the original not have any of that shit?
They had stuff where they did that, but it wasn't. It didn't have the same feel.
Whole time I'm thinking of when they get as soon as they meet
the town ready.
As soon as they meet the townspeople, and the townspeople are like, "We're not gunfighters." As soon as I see that, all I kept thinking was the Three Amigos, and I'm like, "What can you do? What do you do well?" They're like, "We sew," and then you just have Martin Short going, "You sew." Then like they're like making shit like so like the wind, and that's all I kept thinking about this. Yeah, they try to use the skills of the townspeople kind of thing.
In the original, they prepare the town and they build like walls and stuff like that, and then they teach the villagers to use weapons. And like one guy is like really good, so he like goes with them and stuff like that, and he kind of joins the group a little bit. So that's what I mean. They form a stronger bond with the townspeople than in this one. But this one, they didn't do all this stuff where they made the traps and all this stuff like they did, and that's where I guess
in this one the one who was really good would be the female character. She ended up being the really good shooter.
Yes, yeah. Yes. But she was naturally that thing. Like this guy, they had to teach him how to do it. He just had an aptitude for
it. Gotcha.
But it was the original. The first hour or so, it's very the two movies are very similar. They kind of keep track with each other. It's in the second hour where the original blows this one away, where they have, like, you know, like I said, many more quiet moments and stuff like that, and with the townspeople, and it helps. And then there's actually a black moment in the original where you know, the villains look like they're gonna win, and then they have to turn it around, and that really never happens in this. I mean, I guess when they bring out the Gatling gun, but
yeah, and I call that like, I was like,
but
I was
at like, that, but at that point, Gatling gun. But this was like in the original, what happens is that the villains get the drop on them, and then they kick them out of the town, and then they have to sneak. So then they have to attack.
Oh, that's
the
much better.
Angle. Yeah, yeah, they have to attack the town to kick
yeah, the Gatling gun thing was too easy, if you will.
Yeah, oh,
like,
yeah,
like,
for sure.
Like, no one had to muddy do anything other, you know, you fire, you spray a gun, and
exactly.
Nothing happened.
And then Chris Pratt apparently then, is invulnerable to bullets for...
Yeah, that's what I was getting ready to say. The end was really stupid because it basically, you have to assume that Chris Pratt is going to not get hit by any bullets by riding a mile out to do what he does, which I guess... We're giving spoilers, but we don't need to give that away.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, like it really doesn't make any sense. Like he could have even thrown it from some length.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? It didn't really make sense the way they set that up. Like you had to very specific things had to happen. Kind of thing.
I was reading Wikipedia and they're describing all the characters and stuff like that. And they said Chris Pratt's character was a gambler and an explosives expert. I'm like, no, he wasn't. He was a drunk gambler.
Yeah, he was a drunk gambler who at one time said, "Ooh, I've always wanted to blow stuff up." That does not make you an explosives expert.
Apparently it does.
No, he said he's never done it before, literally what he said in the movie.
So Magnificent Seven is a movie that you can probably skip. It is a fun movie. It is entertaining. But you don't necessarily have to go see it.
I'm just saying, as far as what's out there now, you get your $10 worth. It's entertaining. I won't say you have to skip it. I just wish they had done more.
I wish they had done more with the cast that they had assembled.
For sure.
And let's talk about Peter Sarsgaard real quick. He's a total cartoonish villain.
He was just like the literal twirling your mustache.
Whiplash. Yeah, snidely whiplash. Yeah. So it's, you know, it could have been a hell of a lot better. But it's like I said, I wish they had done something a little bit different with it. Why make another Western, you know, or write your own Western, you know, write something brand new. Don't make it Magnificent Seven.
And going back to Peter Sarsgaard, you look at that character and you're like, he doesn't even need to act this way. Like,
and he's just evil for evil's sake.
You don't have to be evil to be because you want to make money. You don't have to kill everybody.
He's just evil for evil's sake. Yeah. It's stupid.
Unless you're Michael Myers, then it makes sense.
Let's move on to... the other movie we saw, and this is actually, depending on when I can get this out, an early review. And this is Deepwater Horizon. You probably familiar with that name because this...
It's a porn title.
No. Uh-huh. This happened in 2010, yep. So this happened 6 years ago. And this was the BP oil spill where the blowout preventer failed. I mean, everybody remembers that, the blowout preventer. And it dumped millions of gallons of crude oil into the Gulf of Mexico. Thanks, oil companies. It's directed by Peter Berg, who actually has a cameo in the very beginning.
Yeah.
And stars Mark Wahlberg. And Kurt Russell's in this as well. His adopted daughter, Kate Hudson, is also in it. who else is that? Dylan O'Brien's in it.
Yeah.
And Ethan Suplee is in it. Yeah. I wonder if he's still with Scientology.
John Malkovich.
Now that Jason Lee has left Scientology. I wonder if Ethan Suplee is Jason Lee left Scientology. Yeah.
John Malkovich.
Yes, he is.
He's literally
James Carville.
James Carville mixed with Foghorn Leghorn in this movie.
The movie, it doesn't really get into the politics or anything like that that occurred after and
or before.
It really just focuses on the men and women. Oh, and Gina Rodriguez is in this too. She's a big part. It focuses on the men and women who work on the derrick on the Deepwater Horizon, which was operated by Transocean, but it was basically being rented, I guess, by BP.
That's right. And, they essentially leased these people out. So this is the start of I guess you could call it a mission, if you were. I don't know what you'd refer to it.
It's to tap a well. They're supposed to tap. But they kind of
do like a 3 months on, 3 months off kind of thing.
Yeah.
And this is the start of the new people coming on.
Right.
Including the captain.
Kurt Russell, who plays Mr. Jimmy. They call him Mr. Jimmy.
I just kept singing the Rolling Stones song in my head. And he sung his song to Mr. Jimmy.
Maybe it's about him.
Maybe. the one word is death.
But I will say, even though that doesn't really get into like the politics and stuff that happened afterwards and, you know, whether we should move to green technology, we should, and all that stuff, this movie does firmly lay the blame at the feet of BP.
Oh yeah, yeah. Like you know why what's happening. They do a good job of putting that in there without browbeating it.
Yes, yes, they do.
Yeah,
they show that the BP guys really didn't know what they were doing and they were just rushing things because they wanted to get their money. The
corporate taskmasters.
They want to get their money.
Looking at their budget.
And the blue collar guys who really knew their shit about the rig knew. No, you can't do that. And then, sure enough, what happened was a disaster.
Yeah, so essentially, as soon as they get on board, Kurt Russell played Mr. Jimmy, who's playing, you said he's the foreman? Is that what his official title
something like
is?
That, so I guess. Captain, yeah, yeah. Foreman yeah, he's of like the rig. Yeah, he's like the foreman of the rig, I think.
Or
at least a project manager or something like that.
And I'm bad with the character names. Mark Wahlberg plays somebody.
Mike Williams.
But he's the chief engineer.
Yes. He's Mr. Scott.
Right. So they kind of fly into and then Michelle, who
Gina Rodriguez.
Gina Rodriguez, but who did she play?
She played
Michelle from No,
it was
Andreas Flautas.
She's the
engineer who designed the whole.
Yeah, who designed the engine? Because what happens is it's not just a derrick just standing up in the ocean.
This is a boat.
It's actually a boat. Yeah. Yeah, and
so they fly in, and as soon as they hit the helicopter pad, the tension kind of starts,
right?
Because they ask, you know, has XYZ been done in the prep work for them to drill?
They needed to
lay the foundation. Extra cement
right.
is supposed to be poured in to make sure that the ground is solid.
Right.
And
they didn't test
The BP people decided that since they were already behind, they didn't need to worry about that.
Right.
So they didn't do it, but they didn't tell anyone they didn't do it. So there's a lot of upfront, like, did it get done? Did it not get done? And then, of course, BP, once they start speaking to the BP officers on board, John Malkovich and the other guy.
I forget the other guy's name.
Yeah. You know, they try to give them the runaround on it's ready. Right. They won't say it's not done. They're right. Like, we're ready to go. So anyway, they're forced. Kurt Russell forces them into doing some tests.
Right.
Which which seemed to indicate, the test seemed to indicate that there is an issue, but there it also kind of indicates it's an anomaly, that it could be a false positive.
Right.
So they're going to some more tests, and they're kind of strong-armed by BP, but also with some logic in there that the tests are a false positive and that they're okay to drill.
Right.
And, of course, as soon as they drill...
It wasn't a false positive.
Boom goes the dynamite. Right.
And, and then it's all about survival and getting off the thing. I was actually surprised, and I mean, no real spoilers here, because I mean, this happened. It's a real life event.
There's no twist here.
You can read about it in Wikipedia. Yeah. I was actually surprised at how many people got off that thing. Because when you see it in the movie, you're just like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Well, it was only 13 people died.
11.
11.
11 people died, and there were over 100 something people on the thing. So it's amazing that many people got off.
Yeah.
But
I think the thing is, I think
because it happens so fast
in the movie, I think the movie's probably likely, like I know, right? Likely tries to depict it accurately, right? But it's kind of hard to figure out a real time frame of once it happens to once they're off the boat. But I think for a long time it's kind of isolated. So it gives a lot of people time. Because
it really focuses on Mark Wahlberg and Kurt Russell.
But I mean, once the explosion is kind of isolated at first, as opposed to
exploding
the whole thing.
Yeah,
I
will say that's one thing they really didn't get across, was just how big that thing was. Because they mention it, but you really don't get an idea of the scope.
Yeah,
because there is an explosion, and then like a bunch of people are like, they don't even know what's happening, you know. And meanwhile, in this one sector of the
original explosion is very isolated,
right?
And then it expands because the problem is bigger underground,
right,
as the oil
and
as
then
the
some
ground
gas
breaks,
or something gets loose,
right?
Like
so I think that
over.
There's why I think most people were able to escape is that I think they were off before the.
Probably
you see most people. You see the
because what happens is
you
the
see
gas
those final people leave, and those are the last.
The gas gets into the vents, and then it's all over. Because once the fire hits that,
it was a very tense explosion. It was cool. From a movie perspective.
Yeah.
It was done really well. That was shot well.
Yeah.
You see, like Kurt Russell's like in the shower, and the whole thing just.
Blows
him back.
And his situation after that, he kind of puts John McClane to shame.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, he was fucked up.
But it was a really good movie. I enjoyed it.
I'm not going to say really good, but it was.
I mean, I liked it. I mean, I thought it was good. I thought it was, you know, it was a lot like Lone Survivor in that it really
did. I didn't think it was as good, though.
It wasn't as good as Lone Survivor. Yeah. Well, because Lone Survivor was a better story.
I agree.
Think.
That's what I'm saying.
But what I'm saying is it's similar to it in that it doesn't really. Because it doesn't get all rah-rah and shit like that, it just says, you know, this is what happened.
It tells the facts of the story.
This is what happened.
Yeah, exactly.
And this is, But Lone Survivor is just a better story because that's, you know, that's four guys against a fucking army, you know? So it's you know, that's... like we said, Lone Survivor, Peter Berg and Mark Wahlberg, the last movie they did together was Lone Survivor, which was one we reviewed a couple years ago when it came out.
It was a very sneaker hit for us.
Yeah, and we were surprised at how much we liked it, because we expected it to be kind of like a Michael Bay type movie, where we're just like, it's a not as stupid as a Michael Bay movie, but a very rah-rah military type thing, and it really isn't. It's really just about those four guys and them fighting for their lives, and that's really what this is about, too. And but Lone Survivor is definitely a stronger script, I would say, a stronger screenplay. But I kind of liken this one also at the same time to Sully, because this is an event that everybody knew what happened.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, I was surprised at how many people got off. I thought more people probably died in what happened. But
I mean, clearly there's more tension in this one,
right?
Because there are actual deaths and a big explosion.
Right.
So.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely worth your time.
Oh, I mean, yeah, for sure. Yeah, don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. It is worth your time. I didn't think there's anything great about it, but I thought it was very solid.
Yeah, it's a solid B movie.
Yeah.
One last thing. I also saw Snowden, Oliver Stone's new picture.
Yeah, what'd you think of that one?
I gave it a B. I thought it was a solid biopic, I thought. But I've never seen Citizen Four. But I would have to imagine that if anyone's seen Citizen Four, you probably don't need to see this.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, I've seen Citizen Four, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
Which won the documentary of
for
the
Oscar,
year,
right.
The Oscar.
Yeah. I mean, and the framing device for Snowden are the interviews
that they did for Citizen Four. Gotcha. Like Melissa Leo plays the documentarian.
Okay.
Tom Wilkinson plays the guy from The Guardian, and then Zachary Quinto plays Glenn Greenwald.
I see. Okay.
And then obviously Joseph Gordon-Levitt plays Snowden, and Shailene Woodley plays his girlfriend. Now you can tell me, since you saw Citizen Four and I didn't, I'm guessing she doesn't play a lot into it at all. They don't talk about her that much
no,
at all.
No.
So
no,
I guess what this really does is it shows more the personal end of it for him.
Gotcha.
Because it documents about 9 years of his life, basically. Gotcha. And another person in Snowden that's really good, Reese Ifans, is he plays the CIA guy who kind of becomes like, he takes him on as like a protege, and he's real creepy in it. He's really cool. He plays Corbin O'Brien,
okay,
which is a very CIA name, but he was really good in it. I liked it. I know it's getting mixed reviews. I think a lot of critics are just like, oh, this isn't a typical Oliver Stone movie. It's like, well, too bad. I mean, it's a biopic, you know, it's about this guy and what happened. Now, I will say that Oliver Stone is 100% in the tank for Snowden. So it's like, you know, so it's not like there's going to be no mention. I mean, they kind of, I wouldn't say they gloss over the fact that he stole all the documents and stuff like that, but, you know, it's more about the privacy stuff and all that kind of stuff, which you would expect from Oliver Stone.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, that's no different than the rhetoric that it took, the story itself took when it got out, right? I think most of the public glossed over the fact that he did steal documents. It was on some level treasonous.
And the thing that he is... And they do have a section at the end where they actually talk to Edward Snowden himself. And his thing is, he is willing to come back and face the music. He just doesn't want to be tried under the Espionage Act.
Of course.
Because he doesn't, because that's, he said, that's not what I was trying to do. I wasn't trying to sell secrets to other, because if he comes in under the Espionage Act, then he gets the secret warrants, he wants to be tried in a public trial domain, yeah.
I don't take a strong opinion one way or the other to this, but of course the devil's advocate of that is it doesn't really matter your intention,
right?
The secret's true. you let it out,
yeah.
You may have let it out to everyone,
yeah.
But that includes,
yeah,
United States enemies or other countries. You know, right. That intent is not always. I don't know that plays so heavy into treason,
right?
But that said, I think what he did, you know, needed to get out.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I don't think that's a question.
Everyone had to know what Ben Linus had created.
That's right.
So that'll do it for this episode. If I got the Sully in there, then Sully is decent, but you should probably catch it on TV.
Yeah, it's more of a TV, made for TV movie anyway.
Snowden, kind of the same thing. You can catch that on a rental. Magnificent Seven, if you really feel like you want to, because
it's decent.
Go see it at a matinee. It's a fun movie.
It's fun.
Deepwater Horizon is worth your time. Good. Is worth your time. And Blair Witch, skip it.
Yeah, don't see that one.
And I guess next time we'll be discussing Miss Peregrine's
That's the big opening next week.
And depending on when Deepwater Horizon comes out that week too. Because we saw
the big opening.
No, Deepwater Horizon will do well.
Yeah, I don't think it'll do like as well as Miss Peregrine.
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see.
There's a lot of buzz on that one.
And then also, depending on when we record again, we're going to be seeing Girl on the Train before that comes out as well. So. Yeah. We might talk about that. If we don't do an episode before then, watch Westworld and Luke Cage on HBO and Netflix, respectively. And we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening.